walks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animal, talking animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animals. Talking animals. Talking animal.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today is Tippi Hedren, a longtime animal advocate and actress most closely identified with Alfred Hitchcock, and who has just published a memoir entitled, fiddlingly enough, Tippi, a Memoir. In the new book, Hedren chronicles her rise from shy girl growing up in Minnesota to reaching great heights in Hollywood as an actress in Hitchcock's The Birds, providing an unvarnished account of what she views as Hitchcock's obsession with her, and worse. She also provides an extended account of the misadventures of making the film Roar, which featured dozens of lions and other cats and big animals, and was beset by one disaster after another, including numerous injuries to cast and crew, earning the description the most dangerous movie ever made. Acquiring and caring for all those Roar-related animals evolved into the Shambhala Preserve, her sanctuary for rescued big cats, where Hedren, now 86 years old, has lived for decades. I recorded the interview with Tippi Hedren on Monday that I'll play back in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Later, I'll speak with Joel Waltman, co-founder of Vet Pronto, a relatively new company that's offering house call veterinary services for dogs and cats, mitigating one of the most dreaded activities of sick pets and their humans, the visit to the vet. Vet Pronto was launched in San Francisco and is now expanding into 7 new cities, including New York, Chicago, Washington, D.C., and Tampa. We'll speak with Waltman deeper into today's program. First, though, we're going to play an animal song in salute to Tippi Hedren and her longstanding kinship with lions and other big cats. It also serves as an excuse to play Van Morrison, always a worthy enterprise. So here now is The Lion This Time from Van Morrison on Talking Animals.
The lion this time again is in the circus in a cage. He's trying to break out of the frame. The lion this time. He hears that same old sad refrain, but they can't hold him with no chain, and they just can't denounce his claim. The lion again. And he's trying to get free. He knows that something's bothering me. Then I the lion again. Oh, the loving's in his soul. He's trying to get out, you know. Only you could hear it roar. The lion again this time. They couldn't take away his throne. He knows that he must stand alone. If need be, have a heart of stone. The lion again. The lion this time again. He's in the circus in a cage. No wonder that he's in a rage. The lion again. Mm-hmm. and they're trying to get free. And oh, there's something's bothering me. But when I'm not too blind to see the line this time, the longing that's in a soul, trying to get out, you know. Only you could hear it roar for the line this time. They couldn't take away his throne. He knows that he must stand alone. He'll need me of a heart of stone, the Lion King.
That's Van Morrison, who, by the way, plays three shows next month at Ruth Eckert Hall. Of course, they're sold out, as I think they were instantly, but I might just have to try to sneak in. We heard The Lion This Time, a nod to Tippi Hedren, my guest today on Talking Animals. In fact, let's proceed directly to playing back that interview recorded Monday and making a return to the show after more than a decade. This is Tippi Hedren on Talking Animals.
Thank you so much, Tippi, for joining us again on Talking Animals.
Well, I'm delighted. Thank you for inviting me.
For sure. Well, first, of course, congratulations on the book. I found it engaging. It was a breezy, fun read, chock full of fascinating, often very, very candid disclosures, and more than a few unsettling passages. Not sure which was more harrowing, actually, your account of the Alfred Hitchcock creepy obsession and how you put a stop to it, or your account of the trials, tribulations, and major injuries along the way in making your film Roar. But since the focus of the show is animals, I think that should be the focus of our conversation today, so maybe we'll circle back to the Hitchcock story later, but let's first discuss present-day Shambhala and your work, and we'll kind of work backwards from there. Maybe you could provide an overview of the preserve and its location, its size, its setup, and so on.
All right. We say Shambhala. I've been doing this since the early 70s when my then-husband and I did a movie about the animals in the wild and the problems they have out there due to encroaching civilization, sport hunting, and poaching. And this all came about after I had done a couple of films in Africa and in the early 70s and becoming aware of, you know, how dangerous the animals' lives were just because people were, you know, using them as you know, lifelines and jobs and, you know, really treating them as businesses. And we were trying to make people aware of the fact that these are animals that needed to be treated as thinking, feeling beings, and they needed to be treated with greater care than they were, you know, not as businesses. And you know, so we were trying to put out a great deal of awareness about these animals. And that's what we were trying to put across.
Sure. And how many animals lived there when you first established the preserve, and how many live there currently?
Well, when we first started out, we had it was close to 100.
Wow. And it's a good deal fewer now, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Right?
because awareness has gone out and people aren't hearing it, which is really wonderful.
So there's not as much need for finding homes or placing homes for big cats as there were at sort of the peak of when you...
No, but once they come to the Shambhala Preserve, they're here for the rest of their lives.
Right. Right.
You know, we don't let them go once they're with us. They're
sure.
They're with us for the rest of their lives.
And is it just big cats now? I mean, obviously, at one point there were elephants and other animals.
Yes, we had two African elephants, and they lived with us for the rest of their lives as well.
But at this point, is it strictly big cats?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And these days, how do you decide which animals to take if somebody contacts you and says, "Hey, Tippy, there's this horrible roadside zoo or this situation we just found out about"?
Well, any animal that we hear about that we take in, we will keep them for the rest of their lives.
Right, but I guess what I'm saying is, unless you have just unlimited capacity, I would think you'd have to make some decisions, because there's always big cats, unfortunately, looking for homes or horrible new situations that are discovered.
You know, when we started doing this, we were very open about teaching the problem that was existing.
Right.
And very, very, very open about teaching the fact that these animals are not pets.
Right.
You know, they're apex predators, top of the food chain, one of four of the most dangerous animals in the world. A lion or a tiger is not a pet. And we were very, very open about teaching the dangers of having these animals as being bred and sold as a pet.
Right.
And, you know, it took years for people to get this into their heads.
Well, unfortunately, I mean, I think you've obviously made tremendous inroads, but unfortunately, you still hear and read all the time about people who have big cats as pets nonetheless, or have sort of, you know, roadside zoos or whatever. So I guess one of my questions is, when those are discovered and people are saying, okay, well, we have to seize those big cats and we have to find a good home for them, I'm sure they must contact you in some of those cases. So what I guess I'm curious about is, probably can't say yes every single time you get a call like that. So what criteria do you use to say, you know what, we will take those cats?
All I'm telling you is that the numbers have diminished tremendously.
Yes.
Yeah,
so you're never
people are getting smarter.
So you're never asked anymore to take any big cats?
Very rarely.
Wow, that's really interesting. Okay, that's
very rarely.
Wow, I'm surprised by that, but that's interesting. Okay, let me let folks know this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Tippy Hedren, the actress who has long run Shambhala Preserve, a sanctuary for big cats, who recently published her memoir called, fittingly enough, Tippy, a Memoir. This conversation was recorded Monday. As you kind of noted a moment ago, Shambhala was really the outgrowth of the long years of preparation for the film Roar, particularly accumulating all the lions and then tigers and other big cats that were to be your co-stars in the movie. I see references to Roar as the most dangerous movie ever made. First, is there any chance you would dispute that description?
No, I wouldn't.
Yeah. I wouldn't think so, having read the book, yeah. But, of course, what accompanies a phrase as sweeping as the most dangerous movie ever made is other forms of hyperbole, like the longstanding rumor that some 70 people were injured in the making of it. Now, what's the
number? Well, I think that's an exaggeration.
Yeah, what's the number of injured you would cite?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Because I did think reading the book, and any reader, I guess, could be excused for thinking, oh, my goodness, another injury. It did seem pretty constant there, just in your telling of the... of the story.
Well, I think that's an exaggeration.
You know, there's a moment in the book after you've recounted this whole string of disasters and injuries and escaped lions and fires and floods and what have you, when you wryly note that one of the things you and your then husband, who was wearing multiple hats in the making of War, did not consider ever was scrapping the project.
No, we never did.
Yeah.
Never.
So when you were working on the book, to what extent did thinking carefully about the making of Roar, as you were getting all your thoughts together to share in this book, strike you as like some sort of lunacy? Like, what were we thinking then that we just kept going?
I don't know. We just never thought about scrapping the whole thing ever.
Yeah.
We never did.
Right.
Never.
But I guess just in thinking about it when you're putting your book together, I'm wondering if you then thought, like, you were almost writing about different people. Like, how, you know, these are almost like characters. Like, how could these people face with all these things and giving all these obstacles?
No, we never even thought about it that way.
Yeah, I see. Okay.
No.
It's interesting because you seem, in the times that we've spoken in the past and in the book itself, you seem so kind of no-nonsense that it just seems hard to reconcile that aspect with the ongoing madness of making that film, seemingly at any cost. But I guess you guys just had such a drive for this vision that just, again, the idea of setting aside or just saying, okay, this is too big for us to just keep going. There's too many messages here that we should stop to actually heed those messages.
Well, I think that's exactly what we were thinking. It was just, bigger than we ever expected, and we were going to finish it.
Yeah.
And we did. It finished our marriage, but that was...
Yeah, well, that's
neither here nor there.
Right. Well, that's the thing. I mean, it was so, I mean, to see the incredible determination and the fact that nothing did deter you guys from continuing down the path. I mean, it was so heartbreaking to, especially in your description of it. I mean, if you'd follow the story outside of the book or prior to the book, you knew this anyway. But that to sort of have it, the verdict of the movie, you quoted some of the reviews and just otherwise, other than some international attention that didn't really get any support here in the U.S. And it just seemed like, oh my God, they've gone through hell, literally, sometimes almost biblical sort of stories of hell with flooding and fires and stuff. And this thing isn't going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, well, that's life, isn't it?
Right. Well, it's life, and of course, it's also showbiz, I guess, too.
Yeah,
so,
true.
Yeah. So, with the benefit of hindsight, what would you have changed about the process of making War, and at what point in all those, because this spans a number of years, at what point might you have made the whatever change this is?
You know, I can't answer that.
Okay.
I can't answer that.
So it just never occurred to you, or just there's just no way to kind of go back and...
Yeah, I think if it had occurred to us, we would have done it.
Yeah, no, but I think as we've established,
mean,
you guys
mean
were so...
hindsight, I don't even know that.
Yeah, okay, because you guys were so caught up in it. To me, at the time, reading the description, I could see how you guys would just keep going. It was just like a mission.
Yeah, it was just such a highly dramatic thing we were doing.
Yeah.
And there were just the care of the animals, just that in itself was so encompassing that just that alone was huge.
Right. Well, that's what I mean. Just sometimes, even when things weren't going wrong with the actual shooting of the film, but there was a horrible fire nearby or rains that caused flooding,
yeah,
then that meant like moving, gathering up and moving all these big cats. And I mean, so to me, it just seemed so all consuming and just exhausting. Just,
yes, it was.
It
was gigantic.
So
absolutely gigantic.
Well, I think it's safe to say animals and various aspects of Roar constitute a much larger section of the book than does the section about Alfred Hitchcock. Yet nearly
that was nothing.
Yeah, but isn't that funny though how disproportionate things are? Because just about every review and story I've seen is focused on your Hitchcock account.
Oh, that was just silliness.
Yeah, but it is interesting what leaps out, and again, relative to how much space in the book that occupies. But, you know, your complicated working relationship with Alfred Hitchcock has been written about and was addressed in that HBO film, The Girl, and has been the subject of chatter and gossip for decades. But far as I know, this book, Tippi, represents the first time you've really directly addressed it, at least openly.
Mm-hmm.
So, and kind of where it went sideways. Did writing about it provoke a sense of trepidation, or actually was it just relief?
About what?
About writing about what all happened there with Alfred Hitchcock.
Oh, that was so nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, it really was nothing.
Yeah. But, I mean, you hadn't really addressed it directly ever, as far as I know, until the book, so...
I handled it at the time, and as far as I was concerned, that was over. It was, you know, this sort of thing happens to every woman in the world, and, you know, we learn as young women to... this happens to every woman.
Well, that's sad, and hopefully that's less and less true.
Well, you know, you learn to handle those things when you're a young woman, and you know, it's over and it's done, and of course when you're dealing with a celebrative person, it becomes a big deal. and to a lot of people, to when it's happening, it's nothing. It's over and it's done. And but to the general person, it's a big deal. And
well, and it even in your telling of it, I mean, it was certainly no small deal at the time, because he made good on his threat to try to really damage or ruin your career, and you couldn't take any offers for some years. And so it was significant even to you then, and I think there's some illuminating things about it now, because as you say, if I hope that's not so true anymore, but if, you know, women go through this kind of thing routinely, then any lessons they can
well,
learn.
Well, as long as that woman walks away with her head held high, she's okay. That's it becomes a very personal thing, and it is that woman who has to deal with her own her own feelings about herself. You know,
and what sort of obligation did you feel, since you were writing your memoirs, to address the whole Hitchcock thing?
Well, I had to, because if I hadn't,
you'd still be asked about it anyway.
All the time.
Yeah, yes. That's what I figured. All right, Kay, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is actress and animal activist Tippi Hedren, who recently published her memoir, Tippi, a memoir, which covers everything from her work with Alfred Hitchcock to the endless misadventures of making the film Roar to establishing a sanctuary for big cats called Shambhala Preserve. This conversation was recorded Monday. So I guess back to Shambhala a little bit. I'm sure you adore all the animals there, but I'm also sure, or think I'm sure, there must be one or two particularly close to your heart. Which ones are there, and why?
Oh, there have been so many. One was a little lion named Billy, and his mother abandoned him, and I became his mom. I had to bottle feed him, and of course, I then became his mother, you know. And,
well, he was so young, I guess he really kind of imprinted on you just because...
I was his mom.
Yeah.
And, of course, then as he grew older and he had to protect me, it became a very, very dangerous situation at one point. And he had to protect me, and it was, you know, these things become very, very dangerous when a young lion decides that he had to protect me, and he almost attacked my then husband. Yeah, so those things become very dangerous.
Well, that's the thing, when they get protected and weirdly jealous. As you note a number of times in the book, these are, at the end of the day, these are wild animals, and they, you might think, hey, they're cuddly and nice and we have a great relationship, but they're still wild animals that could turn on a dime.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yes, it is, and those things just sort of spring out at you, and you've got to really think fast.
Yeah, that's the thing. You really get the sense of a lot of sort of crisis management, and you don't have a second to spare.
Yes, you said it right there, crisis management.
Is there an animal or two at the moment that lives at Shambhala that you just have a particular soft spot for?
No, because we don't have contact, like during those years that happened.
Yeah.
We don't have any one-on-one contact with them.
But you still live right on the Shambhala grounds,
right?
Oh, yes,
I do. In fact, I'm looking right out my window right now at a very, very beautiful tigress.
So that's why I figured there might be somebody that you might have some kind of special connection with.
Oh,
just
sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, we do. Yeah.
And you also talk a little bit in the book about your efforts some years ago to help propose legislation that would protect big cats, especially in the face of the whole...
Yes,
black...
and I was successful in getting a bill passed.
Yeah, and do you still have a hand in some of those ongoing legislative efforts? Because there's always more efforts to sort of tighten up those laws or get new ones that would further protect.
Well, the bill that I did get passed was to stop the breeding of the big cats to be sold as pets or for financial gain, and that has been so successful that it's still working very, very well, and in fact, some people were at the preserve this past weekend and were commenting on the fact that they were noting that it's still in progress and still working.
That's
and
great.
Wonderful it is that it's still in progress.
Yeah. Well, again, the name.
Out and buy a little lion or a tiger.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is you get more and more involved with animals and animal welfare. You really see that it all comes down to legislation, and everything else is great and noble and ambitious, but you really need strong sort of legislation.
Because in point of fact, a little lion cub or a tiger cub is so adorable, but they are not pets. I mean, they are apex predators and should not be in somebody's home as to be brought up as a pet. They're not.
Well, and of course, that brings up the whole issue of tiger cubs and petting and photos and that whole sort of industry still is hard to control sometimes, even with someone.
And the more people understand that, the better everyone will be. And when any child says, oh, I want a little lion, tiger, cub, or whatever, it is the parent who has to say, no, these are not pets. They should never be pets.
Yeah.
And we will take you to the zoo and you can look at them there, and but just know that this is not the kind of animal to be a pet. In fact, they belong in the wild, and that's where you should understand that they belong.
In a way, mentioning that and mentioning the zoo kind of brings me to another question. I'm sure you were pleased to see Ringling Brothers suspend the use of elephants in the circus shows, but of course other animals including lions and tigers continue to perform. What are your thoughts on how to address this and try to see if we can similarly...
Oh, you know, I would suggest that if a circus has lions and tigers performing, don't go.
Mm-hmm.
Don't attend.
Yeah.
And make your reasons for your not attending is that because they have lions and tigers in performing. Because it's brutal to the animal, and it's giving the wrong message. These animals should not be doing those stupid tricks.
Yeah, well, when you see a tiger leap through a ring of fire, you can only imagine what sort of horrible training has taken place.
It's unconscionable.
Yeah.
It's brutal on the animal, and there's something wrong with that human that they can make those animals do that.
Well, again, let's hope that some of the same protests and other efforts that eventually put enough pressure on Ringling to halt the elephants maybe carries over to halt all animals.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's an unconscionable act that they're perpetrating against those animals.
And Tippi, you make it clear in the book that family is enormously important to you. So I may have an idea about your answer to this question. But at this point, what's a great day for Tippi Hedren? What would you do? Where would you go? Who would you be with on a perfect day for you?
I'm sorry, I don't understand the question. What?
Well, just if you could sort of design a great day for you, what would constitute a great day? Where would you be, or who would you be with, or what would you do to make?
I would be with my daughter Melanie and my grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and we will be together at Christmas.
Nice.
And I'm so looking forward to that. We're going to be together at Melanie's home.
Great.
And we will be staying with her and her family.
Nice.
And I'm very excited about it.
When push comes to shove, anytime you can, you always want to be with family.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Well, Tippi, well, thank you so much for making the time to join us today on Talking Animals. Again, the new book is Tippi, a Memoir, available wherever you get your books. We've been speaking, of course, with Tippi Hedren, and the website for the Shambhala Preserve is Shambhala, shambala.org. So thank you very much, Tippi, for joining us again on Talking Animals.
And I hope you will acquire my book, and I hope you'll enjoy reading it as much as I have enjoyed living it.
All right. Well, there you go. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much.
And my thanks again to Tippi Hedren. And, of course, the Melanie she's referring to there is Melanie Griffith. The family is a big, sprawling family. She makes clear in the memoir that, despite most cases, at least for Melanie Griffith, if not so much for Tippi, ex-husbands and offspring of all kinds are always welcome at these gatherings. And, of course, now there's another generation of actresses in that family with Dakota Johnson. So, again, our thanks to Tippi Hedren talking about her new book, Tippi, a Memoir. In a few moments, I'll speak briefly with Joe Waltman, co-founder of Vet Pronto, which offers house call veterinary services. The company began in San Francisco and is now expanding to 7 new cities, including Tampa. Right now, it's time to step into the comedy corner, extending today's big cat theme. This is Nate Bargatze with a piece called Thinking About Buying a Home Security System? Consider a Tiger. In today's comedy corner on Talking Animals.
They did a thing on 60 Minutes about, like, do you know you can buy a tiger here? Like, in this, like, if you guys want to buy a tiger tonight, I could get you in touch with someone that does have tigers. I don't know if I can. It's a real, you can't buy a tiger here in the US. They did an undercover like reporting on it. And my favorite part was they asked the guy that sells tigers, they were like, so do you think it's like too easy to buy a tiger in this country? And the guy was like, yeah, yeah, it's like, it's way too easy. And you know what? That's why America's the best, all right? I didn't even know you could buy tigers. Like, I would have been embarrassed to ask. And then I come and find out, I don't really have to jump through hoops if I do want to buy a tiger. It's not an all-day thing, it's like an hour. I'll be right back with our tiger. And everybody wants to take away guns, you know, it's like we gotta get everybody's guns. But then that makes me nervous, because I think if you take away guns from people, those are the exact same people that will buy tigers. And that's a much bigger problem, all right? Like, you're probably gonna be like, look, here's your gun back. And they'll be like, no, I'm good, dude. My tiger is way better than my gun. My gun missed all the time. My tiger rarely misses. Even if he does miss, it's just for a second, you know? Like, it's never, like, if the guy dodges, he's like, your dumb tiger missed. It's like, I mean, it did not. It is right behind you now. And, yeah, he's pissed about it. So.
That was Nate Bargatze with a piece called Thinking About Buying a Home Security System? Consider a Tiger. Taken from an appearance on Stand Up Planet. Now on to my conversation with Joe Walton, co-founder of Vet Pronto, which provides mobile veterinarians making house calls to care for dogs and cats. It was launched in San Francisco and is expanding into 7 new cities, including Tampa. So let's welcome now to Talking Animals, Joe Waltman. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals. So let's talk first about the genesis of Vet Pronto. To what extent was it born in the tech world relative to the vet world?
Yeah, it's probably more of a tech thing than a vet thing. Two of the three co-founders have a software background, and we started out with the sort of flawed hypothesis that there's a lot of smart people and smart money going after human health ideas. Why don't we copy some of those ideas and apply them to animal health? The initial ideas we copied failed miserably in animal health, but in the process, we talked to over 100 pet owners and asked them typical questions like, what's the worst part of owning a pet? And they all almost unanimously responded, going to the veterinarian. So that presented us with a new opportunity, which was creating kind of a 21st century class house call service. And that's been going quite well.
If I'm not mistaken, one of the co-founders has an interesting background and certainly very relevant for this discussion. He was a Microsoft engineer turned veterinarian, if I'm not mistaken. Is that one of your co-founders there?
You might be morphing two of our co-founders together. One of them was a Microsoft engineer. He's the CTO. He's very much the engineer guy. The veterinarian co-founder, although she is quite technically adept, she's not quite a Microsoft engineer.
Oh, okay. So Brian is the former, but not the latter, of a gender
exactly.
Difference.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Meanwhile, Joe, of course, mobile veterinarians are not new. I can think of a handful in Tampa off the top of my head. But so I gather from what you've already said, Vet Pronto aims for a more cutting-edge, dot-com, Uber-oriented kind of sensibility. Do I have kind of more of the...
Yeah. That's a fair characterization. I mean, we don't do tech for the sake of technology. It's ultimately a tool to help things run more efficiently.
Right.
But there are many house call vets out there. It was actually the original way veterinary care was provided back in the good old days when we all lived on farms and had animals working for us.
Sure.
The vet clinic is a somewhat new invention. That being said, most of these mobile vets that are out there right now are one-person shops, and it's the vet obviously providing the care, but also doing the marketing, doing the billing, doing the scheduling, and you can imagine how quickly they hit their operational ceiling. So our goal is to use technology to the extent we can, but also use processes and people to take a lot of the non-vet stuff off the veterinarian's plate and let them focus on what they do best, which is providing great veterinary care.
With that in mind, let's sort of go through this. Now, let's say one of my cats, Elwood, seems sick. I do have a cat named Elwood. Anyway, instead of rounding up the cat carrier, shoving Elwood into it, and heading to the vet, I decide to try Vet Pronto. So what happens next?
Yeah, if Elwood is like most of his other felines, he probably doesn't enjoy going to the vet very much. And oftentimes the trip to the vet can be more stressful than what you were bringing him to in the first place, or can cause more harm than what you're bringing him there for in the first place. So what you do is either call us up, go to our website, or download our mobile app, and you would book an appointment through any one of those channels. Since you would be a new client, we would give you a call, have a quick chat about what's going on, what we can help with. We would also get the names of your previous vet clinics, and we would go and request all of the records from those vet clinics, and we would upload them to our system. When the day for the appointment came around, our vet would review the history we collected as well as the previous records, hopefully show up on time, hopefully do whatever Elwood needed having have done to him. And then afterwards, that evening or the next morning, you would get a summary email from the vet basically describing what happened and giving you any instructions for what to do moving forward. And after that appointment, you would then have access to us over phone and email for any follow-up questions.
That scenario sounds smooth and cool and easy and certainly low stress for Elwood and therefore low stress for me. But let's say that part of the reason I'm concerned, and in this case, trying vet pronto as opposed to doing my more conventional go to the vet thing, is Elwood is sick or showing some kind of symptoms that have me very concerned. So I guess what I'm wondering in that scenario, how quickly has your experience shown that you can get records from previous vet clinics that have treated Elwood such that you are armed with those on an appointment that can't just wait till, hey, sometime next week whenever it's convenient, but like, hey, I've got a sick cat and I need to get him attention?
Yeah, but believe it or not, vet clinics are pretty cooperative with that. And when we request the records, we make it clear when the appointment is. So oftentimes we have same day bookings, and the vet clinics will then prioritize that record request. And we can usually get them within an hour, oftentimes much faster than that. Yeah.
And I guess that's sort of the product of these days, as in human care, that so many vet clinics have their records and histories and stuff digitally handled. So
it's the law that they have to give records to other requesting clinics. They're seeing it, so they it's something they take rather seriously.
Right, but is that law state a timetable by which those do need to be delivered, or just that they do need to comply?
Yeah. There's a timetable. Actually, the timetable is 3 days.
Okay.
So if they want to be difficult, they could wait 3 days. But that's kind of a jerk thing to do. I mean, ultimately, it's all about the welfare of Elwood over there, and most vet clinics are very, or I would say all, that is their primary concern. So the records is definitely a challenge, and it is quite manual. Oftentimes, you have to call them up manually and ask for them. There aren't great, electronic exchanges for that, but we've gotten pretty good at doing that.
I'm sure, because that's sort of pivotal, it seems like, to especially establishing a new client there. So let me know, folks, who just might be tuning in. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Joe Waltman, co-founder of Vet Pronto, which offers house call veterinary services for cats and dogs. The company is expanding into 7 new cities, including Tampa. And so what is that timetable for that expansion, Joe?
Yeah, it's going actually pretty quickly. So we've been up and running about 2.5 years. Most of that 2.5 years was just in San Francisco, where we're headquartered. We spent a lot of time working out the kink, quite honestly. Although the concept sounds simple, we send a vet to your house, on the back end, it's actually quite complicated, providing great health care in a distributed manner. You know, there's a lot of industrial logic why hospitals have a centralized location where you have all the people, all the supplies, all the equipment, all the information in one place. When you spread that out around a city or around the country, you have to do a lot more work to make sure the right people, the right supplies, the right medications, the right information get to the right place at the right time. And while we're not perfect and we still have room for improvement, we feel like we've gotten our platform to a place where we can now go to other cities and roll the model out in a distributed manner.
And along those lines, in terms of what you're saying about the virtues of a hospital having everything it needs in one location. Now, I saw when I was looking for an image to run with a little Facebook post, last night, I saw what looked like, at least, the kind of vehicle that a Vet Pronto vet would presumably come to, well, in this case, again, to look after Elwood in. But it looked pretty small. It looked kind of like more like the kind of thing that Geek Squad or some kind of computer thing. So I just was wondering in my head, A, is that really reflective of the kind of vehicle? And if so, B, what kind of equipment do they really travel with, given space limitations, et cetera?
Yeah, so that's a good question. We've got basically two different kinds of vets from an equipment perspective. There's the vet with a bag, and they travel either in their own car or in an Uber, mm-hmm. and show up with most of what you need to do almost everything except for surgeries and x-rays. There's another category of vet, the vet with a mobile hospital. It's usually a big van or a truck.
Okay.
We actually happen to have one of those vets in Tampa. So this vet, this happens to be Dr. Cherry. He can do anything from his van, surgeries, x-rays, anything you could do at a clinic can be done either in your home or out in front of your home in the van.
Okay, so that's more like if any of us have seen mobile vet operations in the past, that's what you're describing is sort of like a big RV rig fully outfitted with everything.
Basically is a mobile hospital.
Right. Okay. So then, Joe, you know, while we can't get into the specific prices or fees on the air here, in broad terms, how would the cost of this Elwood treatment that we've been sort of hypothetically talking about by Vet Pronto compare to the cost of a more conventional vet office visit?
It's about the same price. On average, we're probably 10 to 20% more expensive than a vet clinic. For obvious reasons, we're bringing the vet out, and the vet can't be as well utilized when they're distributed as they could be at the hospital.
Sure.
But our cost structure is also quite different. We don't have to pay rent. We don't have a lot of the costs that a clinic would have. So it's kind of a different model. Right now, it is, like I said, a little bit more expensive, but I would argue that the added convenience is well worth it.
Right. And it also sounds like some of that maybe I'm just interpreting it that way, part of the overall kind of startup. Do you anticipate a point where when you got a few more years under your belt and the operation is kind of even more developed where the cost might be more directly comparable between Vet Pronto and conventional?
Yeah. You see the writing on the wall. Because we have a different cost structure, once we get volume up to a certain amount, we can become very competitive with clinics and hopefully someday become less expensive.
And so does Vet Pronto treat animals beyond cats and dogs?
Right now we're just doing cats and dogs. We're a speciesist to a certain extent there, but that is the vast majority of what pet owners have. And to be honest, when you start getting into the exotics, it's a fairly small number of vets who can do that well.
Yeah.
So we don't feel like we can provide that coverage right now and as well as we can with cats and dogs.
I gotcha. Who are the Vet Pronto vets in a given city? You mentioned Dr. Cherry here, but how do you find them? And is Vet Pronto sort of a part-time gig for them where they're practicing elsewhere, but within reason they're available to take Vet Pronto calls as their schedule allows? Or
yeah, we've got a couple different profiles of vets. There are some vets for whom Vet Pronto is the only place they work, and we are basically their only source of income. There are other vets who, for whatever reason, just aren't working full-time, and oftentimes clinics aren't very flexible with the vet schedule. So let's say you're a new mommy, and you can't put in a 50-hour week. We're a good option because we let them work as much as they want to work. Kind of like Uber, you turn on the app and hopefully we make you busy.
Yeah.
And then there's another category of vets that have a normal job somewhere else, and for whatever reason, they're looking to make extra money, so they view us as what's called a relief shift, and they do maybe a couple evenings or Saturday a week with us.
So there's every kind of different scenario depending on the vet in question, and I guess you guys are actively seeking, recruiting vets that could fit one or more of those
profiles. That's really important. We don't talk about it much, but the vet side of the marketplace is also really important. I mean, we work really hard to make it as great of an experience as possible for the pet owner, but we're not going to be effective unless we also make it a great experience for the veterinarian. And we think about that a lot. We work on that a lot as a way to, some vets have it kind of hard right now. They're for various reasons, and we're trying to create a wonderful work alternative for the veterinarian.
They have it hard in terms of building and sustaining a practice or financial aspects or what?
There are some weird kind of macroeconomic things going on in the vet world. There's a bit of an oversupply of veterinarians, which is driving wages down a bit. There's also a consolidation of clinics by larger chains, and some vets have reported less than delightful experiences working for some of those larger chains. So we're just trying to, hopefully give vets that can deal with the house calls. House calls are not for everybody, but for vets that can do house calls, give them a nice alternative.
Sure.
The normal vet clinic.
One of our listeners emailed a question here, Joe. It says, will they treat animals that are not current on shots? I don't vaccinate my cats every year.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's something that and that's one of the benefits of the house call. We can usually at a vet clinic, you're getting a 10 to 12 minute consultation with the vet. They got to do 3 to 4 appointments an hour to keep up their production. With us, you're spending at least 30 minutes, sometimes up to an hour with the vet, and you can talk through all of those issues because I understand there are a lot of opinions on vaccinations and there are a lot of pros and cons, and the vet can really walk you through both sides of that discussion. And absolutely.
Yeah.
We don't have a
policy
we don't have a policy that, no, we won't see you if you don't vaccinate. That's,
right.
That's your prerogative.
And Joe, I mentioned a few of the cities that you're going to. As you said, you started off in San Francisco, and I mentioned once or twice in the run-up to our chat here on the show that you are moving into New York, Chicago, Washington, D.C., Tampa, and I think there's two or three other cities, Atlanta maybe, I can't remember all
Atlanta,
of them.
New Orleans. Yeah, we seem to be gravitating towards the southeast.
That's an interesting, since you're coming from San Francisco. What's behind that?
It was somewhat opportunistic. We weren't specifically choosing it. We need to go to New York and Chicago. We were first and foremost looking for vets that would work great with us, and we happened to have found our first few vets in those cities.
I see.
Plan on being in the top 50 metros by this time next year, but for our initial expansion, we wanted to make sure that we had vets that were simpatico.
And how much of this is also oriented, because I know there's other similar mobile vet operations that have had, I think, probably safe to say comparable ambitions. And how is that shaping kind of your expansion and in which direction and how you build the business?
Yeah, I mean, there have been a couple of them that, you know, one or two of which have been pretty well funded. And candidly, they've struggled a bit. I think I understand why they've struggled. They've rolled things out a little bit differently than we have. And they've treated us kind of like a big company would, where spend a lot of money and assume they're going to come. We learned, or due to the fact that we didn't raise a bunch of money, we had to be pretty scrappy and get good at generating awareness, and that is our biggest challenge. The vast majority of pet owners have no idea that a house call is even an option, and we're out there trying to spread the good word.
Yeah.
About the availability of house calls.
Just sort of at the end of our time here, Joe. So speaking of spreading the good word, how can interested listeners find out more about Vet Pronto? You know, website, Facebook, your app, et cetera. Give us the lowdown.
Yeah. So we've got all that stuff. The company is Vet Pronto, vet like veterinarian, and pronto like Italian. They can just search for it, and hopefully it'll come up in their listings. That we've got a mobile app, we've got a Facebook, we've got Twitter. And we'd love any questions or feedback anybody has.
All right, Joe. Well, thanks for joining us, and good luck with the ongoing adventure. And sounds like a cool idea. And thank God Elwood isn't actually sick, but if he were, it sounds like a good place to contact. So thank you so much.
My pleasure.
All right. Coming up at 11 on WMNF, it's Rob Lori and Radioactivity. Rolling into the noon hour constitutes a full 2 hours of interviews, phone calls, news, and more, with contributions from members of the stellar WMNF staff, including, of course, Everyday Ethics with Craig Kopp. Meanwhile, as the prize for Name That Animal Tune, I'll be offering a Talking Animals t-shirt. Right now, it's time for some animal news and announcements. Starting with ahead after the holidays shakeout, the animal-based charities folks want to let you know that Barkarilla 2017 is coming right up. It's going to be held in Ybor City, January 7th from noon to 5. The parade that people, of course, eagerly await each year is going to take place at 2:30. So there's going to be entertainment vendors, food trucks, raffle baskets, all kinds of other things. Of course, dogs are always welcome, and that's unticketed, and the humans pay a small fee that you can check out. And all the proceeds benefit animal-based charity, which, of course, provides adoption venues for animal rescue groups at various locations and events around town. So you can find out more about all that by going to abccharities.org. A little further down the road, another big event coming up under the auspices of the Humane Society of Pinellas is Pet Fest 2017. That's going to be February 4th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the 200 Carillion Parkway in St. Petersburg. And it'll be pet adoptions, vendors, and more. And you can go to humanesocietyofpinellas.org for more information on that. Quick thing provided to me by Jeff Stewart, the host of the amazing Wednesday morning show here, music show on WNF from 6 to 9 a.m. So as far as some of the Trump appointments, there seemed to be talk that this Heidi Heitkamp was going to maybe get the nod as USDA chief, and maybe she still will, but then there was talk of, at least in the transition team, of this guy Brian Klippenstein, who is part of a group called Protect the Harvest, and he's basically characterized in this piece by Mother Jones as a guy who just trolls the Humane Society of the United States. And in fact, there's a phrase here that says he's a right-wing oil magnate and cattle rancher who has himself emerged as a contender to serve as Trump's Secretary of the Interior. I guess we know that didn't happen. And Protect the Harvest seems to exist mainly to troll the Humane Society of the United States. So they've got all kinds of campaigns and things that they're posting to besmirch the Humane Society of the U.S. But more to the point, it just seems like an odd once again, like I guess the other appointments that we've seen, sort of directly antithetical to what the job at hand is. So I guess what we'll leave for today is animal news announcement. I'm Duncan Strauss. You are listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. If you haven't won something from WNF in the last 90 days, feel free to participate. There will be a prize, a Talking Animals t-shirt, to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. We may have to take those guesses off the air because we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Rob Laura is up next with what amounts to 2 hours of radioactivity. I'll be back next Wednesday, December 21st, with our annual Christmas Animal Song Special. Meanwhile, please visit talkinganimals.net where you can find audio archives of every show we've ever broadcast, iTunes podcast as well. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page or Twitter feed and more. Please like us on Facebook, the show, and even better yet, me personally. Follow me on Twitter as well. All that's available at the page, talkinganimals.net. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. This is Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weeki Wachee, and beyond. Community Conscious Radio. Speak to you next Wednesday at 10 a.m. on Talking Animals. Thanks for listening today.